Live from RKGGF Studios in downtown Coffeyville here on this Wednesday morning. Sam Speck, glad you're with us as we continue our conversation with the K-State Research and Extension Office. We were talking a little bit on behalf of Sycamore and Thrucknose. I hope I got that right,
right
before we went off to the break there. And again, if you have any questions regarding that, you can feel free to call us at 620-251-6909. But James, I know you've been getting a lot of questions as well. Something that we were affected pretty heavily by 2 years ago, the wheat rust. I know that's probably going to be popping up here.
Yeah. So along with, you know, anthracnose, along with mushrooms, another type of fungus, you know, is wheat rust. And wheat rust is kind of odd. It actually migrates sort of like birds do. It blows in from Texas. But this rust, you know, comes on the southern storms. But it gets here about this time of year. And there are some years that will have a really strong rust outbreak, and it really does hurt yield throughout the state. We don't grow a lot of wheat here in southeast Kansas, but still, we're a good spot for really heavy infection.
Absolutely. So, is there anything that ties with, you know, weather changes that would mean that it would, you know, impact our area more heavily? Or, I mean, with like dry conditions? Or what would really be the worst conditions for it to be around?
Yeah, so there's three main types of rust. There's leaf rust, stripe rust, and then also like stem rust. But in each one of them, kind of prefer a little bit slightly different weather. But really the cool, wet weather that we've been having is really good for rust, and so they really like that weather. And the same thing with a lot of other fungal diseases that we get in our trees and our grasses and all that, kind of the same temperature time frame. So,
And would that be the way to going to avoiding it, is just kind of an antifungal, or how would you go about that?
Yes, and so producers soon need to make a decision, because really need to be monitoring their fields right now, looking for rust within the lower canopy. Soon our wheat will go, it's already been jointed. Soon it will start to emerge the flag leaf, and protecting that flag leaf is the most important part of protecting against rust diseases, because that flag leaf contributes 80-85% of yield, just that one leaf. And so as soon as that flag leaf emerges, and between then and actually when the head is flowering is usually when most fungicides are allowed to be sprayed. So,
well, I know you guys do quite a bit of driving as well. Is it maybe too early, but have you looked around any of the fields? I know you said we don't necessarily produce too much here in the SEK, but have you seen any areas that have been impacted by it at this point? Or
as far as the state pathologist is saying, you know, they found some in Reno County, they found some in counties farther west, and I've looked around in fields around here. I haven't seen a lot of it. I mean, there's some, it's hard to tell in the beginning. It looks a little bit like rust, but maybe that's one of the other many diseases that wheat get. But if you have a field that you suspect is rust, you know, I want the producer to give me a call so I can come and take a look and send it off to the plant pathologist to get that confirmed. So that way other farmers around the area know that we do in fact have it, and it's something that they need to watch out for.
And what a frustrating, you know, battle almost year in, year out with Mother Nature that you have, because with cooler, damper temperatures, that's prime location for fungal and bacteria as well. And then I'm sure in drier conditions, it is rather damaging, whether with the sun and lack of water or other diseases that come with it. So what a mess that it is really year in, year out that you guys have to hassle with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always,
I mean, that's just wheat alone. And we're talking the abundance of plants that are around here, native, non-native, whichever. And Jacob, I'm sure, you know, you try and keep all that information up there, but I'm sure it's a lot.
One of the things that we're looking at that makes it a challenge to control disease is what I'm called monocultures, where we have the same species, the same variety in a fairly large field, and then all of a sudden everything is susceptible to the same thing, and it can spread very fast. So if you had one wheat plant out all by itself and no other wheat plants all around it at all for several miles, it'd probably be perfectly healthy and escape everything, but that's not the way we can produce food. We cannot produce food in the quantities that are needed to supply the food that the world needs. So we have to do it this way. And so one of the things we do, we have to learn how to manage all these problems, and that's what makes a producer successful. Another thought about rust fungi, Rusts typically require alternate hosts, like cedar apple rust. The spores that are produced on by the cedar trees, from the galls on the cedar trees, will not infect cedar trees. They only can infect a rosaceous plant. And then those spores that are produced on the, like the apple tree, cannot reinfect apple trees. They can only infect cedar trees. But in the wheat field, wheat rust, they produce a little different type of spore. It's an asexual spore called conidiospore, and they can produce lots of them, and those spores can reinfect the same plant, the same species of plant. So that's why wheat rust can be a real serious issue. Different types of rust, or wheat rust, they have the leaf rust, the stripe rust, there's
yeah, and so there's different varieties that are resistant towards more things. Around here, we grow a lot of a variety called Everest. It's kind of an older K-State variety, but Everest, it does good on certain types of rust, but not so great on the stripe rust. And so that's one to definitely the watch out for.
Kind of sounds like that elementary curse, you know? You send your kid off to school doing cold and flu season, and it's almost inevitable with that amount of kids around that kind of floating around in the masses there. He's going to come home with a cold or a flu at some point. Yeah, it kind of sounds like with that curse, you know, with the abundance of it around. So certainly, and you had mentioned as well, the rust with the wheat specifically, that's something that could affect yield pretty significantly?
Yes, yes. So some years, I mean, across the state, we can have yield reductions 20-25%. Jeez. And that's a massive quantity of yield reduction. And so, but I mean, even besides the rust diseases, there's also powdery mildew, there's also septora, and a number of other diseases that can affect wheat. It's just a constant battle, really.
Yeah. Well, again, as you had mentioned, some areas on the western side that may have kind of seen it at this point, but any producers over here, it's probably a good opportunity to get outside and check at this point and make your decision from there on out. So, man, 25%. I know I don't think we'll see that drop in yield quite this year unless you just mismanage it completely. But at the same time, that's quite a chunk of money right there, no doubt. Well, Jacob, you kind of mentioned it there just a little bit. Cedar apple rust, I know it was almost a calendar year ago. You and I were talking about this quite a bit. I just Googled what those things look like a minute ago. What, man, that is odd to be looking at it. Is that when it's on the cedar?
That's on the cedar tree. Okay. Yeah, okay. The eastern red cedar. That's actually a juniper, very common in out in pastures and kind of a weedy plant, weedy tree. It is a weedy, very invasive tree species, and can invade pasture lands. And that's one of the reasons why ranchers burn off the fields in the spring, is to control that particular plant. It's really easy to control with fire when it's small. But cedar tree is an alternate host for this rust fungi, which requires two hosts to complete a life cycle. Life cycle is a sexual life cycle of a rust fungi, and part of that life cycle is spent infecting those cedar trees, and it produces initially the first season it produces a very small gall. Gall is a tumor. Tumor-like growth, and that gall may never get any larger than maybe a BB or possibly a small P. But the second summer, it fully matures into a larger size gall, and I call them porcupine meatballs, about that size, and it has little points, little soft protrusions coming out towards the end of that second season. And then the following spring, this is going to be the third year, that during wet weather, those galls literally explode. During the appropriate wet weather. It has to be what temperatures a certain level, 50-60 degrees or higher, and wet weather. And then when that happens, those galls just explode, produce these large orange tendrils, and they look like jelly.
Quite literally, yeah.
You go up and look at them, look like jelly, and like, what happens here? One fellow said, oh, the cedar trees are blooming now. Yeah, they're blooming, all right. Those galls are producing millions and millions of spores. I believe they're called teleospores, and they're just floating through the air, and they land on the leaves of susceptible host plants. They land on an ash tree, it doesn't do anything. Land on your tomato plant, it doesn't do anything. But if it lands on an apple tree that's susceptible, that spore lands on that surface, that leaf surface that's wet, and it has to have wet a film of water for at least 6 to 8 hours, and ideal temperature conditions, that spore will quickly germinate, produce a little string called a hypha, and it's going to grow into that leaf tissue, find an opening and pop in, or actually penetrate right through the cuticle and go in and start to colonize that little spot, and it's going to produce a lesion. That lesion is not noticeable within the first 2 weeks, but usually after about 2 weeks you start seeing little yellow spots on the leaf, on the apple leaf, and those little yellow spots are going to enlarge. Sometimes they'll get typically about the size of a head of a kitchen match, but sometimes larger. And depending on the number of infected spots, a leaf may turn completely yellow. But those little yellow spots are going to have a red halo around them. And by midsummer, they're going to be producing a protrusion on the underside of the leaf, and those are going to be producing spores that are going to sail through the air, land on cedar trees, and infect the cedar tree again, and cause those little galls on the cedar tree. It doesn't hurt the cedar tree much, but on a susceptible apple tree, you get heavy infection, you get a lot of loss of chlorophyll. And chlorophyll is that part of the leaf that captures sunlight, produces food for the plant. And if you get a loss of chlorophyll, you're going to get a loss of energy production. The quality of the fruit is going to decline. The tree may abort some of the crop. The following year, the tree would be fairly weakened. It probably will not come back and bloom very well. And after several years of repeated infection, heavy infection, the tree may actually succumb to other issues, maybe a borer infestation or invasion by wood decay fungi that typically occur on apple trees. It's not good for the tree. For home fruit producers, the ability to control this disease with fungicides is very limited, because the typical fungicide Captan is not effective on controlling this disease. There's one product called Immunox, and then that one would control cedar apple rust, but it's as far as I can see, it's not generally readily available for home producers. There are other commercial producers that have some fungicides available for this particular disease. But for homeowners, the best method of controlling disease, if you're going to plant an apple tree, select varieties that are resistant to cedar apple rust. And there's a number of varieties that are available, like Enterprise and Liberty. Those are a couple of them that are very resistant to cedar apple rust.
Yeah, it seems like it just goes from one to the next, from the cedar to the apple, back to the cedar. Now, I was going to ask you real quick, you know, when it's an infected cedar tree, do those spores, after they open up, do they kind of just fall off and then the life cycle will start over again, and then it's the 3-year cycle?
That's the end of that particular gall on that tree. After it produces spores, it just dries.
So it doesn't just keep the door open?
No, but there are cedar quince rust is a little different. That is a perennial lesion, and that can produce spores, but that's another issue.
Interesting enough. Again, great information. You can listen back to these interviews on our website at kggfradio.com underneath the community tab, and any of the other information as well you can find on Facebook or at the K-State Research and Extension website. So again, James Coover and Jacob Weber joining us here in studio on this Wednesday morning as a part of our check-in with the K-State Research and Extension offices. James, good to see you again, my man. Jacob, whether it's you or somebody else next week, we'll just check in with you guys next Wednesday.
Okay, very good.
Yep, thank you.
Mighty 690 KGGF.